Off the Ball. GAA.
But that's what people want to see. And there's no greater skill than seeing a player, a high fielding, in that chaos, a player plucking the ball out of the sky. It's a phenomenal skill.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
The News Round on Off the Ball. This is News Talk.
Good evening and welcome along to Monday Night's Off the Ball. It's Owen here with you till 10 o'clock tonight. Arsenal, they are now 2 wins away from a first Premier League title in 22 years. Full live match commentary coming your way from 8 p.m. with Stephen Doyle and Brian Kerr calling proceedings from the Emirates Stadium. They're up against Burnley. For the next hour, though, we'll be trying our best to capture everything that happened across a pretty mad weekend of sport. We'll go from Celtic versus Hearts to Westmeath to the Ulster final to Tip getting knocked out of the hurling championship, basically, to Ireland smashing Scotland in the Six Nations yesterday as well. And to do that, we've got Will O'Callaghan in for bumper news round duty. Will, how are you doing?
Not too bad, Owen.
And Michael McCarthy is here in studio as well. Evening, Mick.
Good evening.
Our number is 0879 180 180. If you do want to get in touch with us throughout the evening, you can drop us a message on WhatsApp. And the omens, they're good for Arsenal tonight because they'll be celebrating just as wildly as everybody in Mullingar last night, because the last year Westmeath won Leinster was indeed the last year that Arsenal won the Premier League. And to celebrate this fact, I thought it's time for the first and probably last great quiz of 2004. To celebrate the fact we've got two bona fide boffins in studio with us tonight, we're going to test your trivia on 2004. How much do you know your Livestrong bands from your Shrek 2s? How much do you know the ins and outs of the...
not even a sport.
How much do you know the ins and outs of the Waterford Crystal scandal? Completely forgotten all about that.
Another such...
Ian O'Connor and his horse. Yeah. That one.
Yes, indeed. Sorry, yeah, to clarify, there was no water for crystal scandal. The rules are very simple. I will give you a massive global event. And all you got to do is tell me if this thing occurred in 2004 or if it did not occur in 2004. So you've got six questions each. I have not
written a
rapid fire.
What a news.
Can we get some tension into the studio, please? Oh,
this Will is 2004 is my leaving cert year, so let's hope Will's leaving cert is one of these answers. So
this is the
during college,
the biggest 2004 related exam you've taken, Will. You're first up. The spire was completed 2004 or not 2004?
I'm going to say not. I think it was earlier.
Correct. It was 2003. 1-0, Will. Millennium. Question two, spire. Mick. The Lewis was opened 2004 or not 2004?
True.
You got bang on. It was 2004. Will.
Guess.
Tyrone won the All-Ireland. 2004 or not 2004?
No, they're the... No.
Well done. 2003 and 2005. Yeah. Mick. Mm. Lost premiered on television. 2004 or not 2004?
How did he get to All-Ireland?
I don't know. I don't think the rules.
Lost was a cultural phenomenon.
No one knows what years those things happened. You don't have lists for those things. I'm going to say no, I think it was later.
Incorrect, it was 2004. 2-1 to Will.
We have a sequence of no, yes, yes, so go on.
Will, the smoking ban was introduced, 2004, not 2004.
I'm going to say no.
Incorrect, it was 2004.
I thought it would
be
earlier.
Yes, indeed, you're still 2-1 up. Mick, 2004, not 2004, Pope John Paul II died.
Not 2004.
Correct, it was 2005. He's levelled it up. Will, Dolores McNamara wins the Euro Millions jackpot. 2004, not 2004.
Poor Dolores. Didn't go well.
I'm going to go yes.
No, it was a year later. It was 2005, Will.
He set us up here.
Come back here now.
We're still level here.
Bottom right hand corner here.
To all, Mick, YouTube was founded. 2004, not 2004.
2005, I believe.
Well done. Good knowledge. 3-2, Mick. Will. 2004, not 2004. Rosanna Davison was one Miss World.
So she was in college at the same time I was in college. And I
was in college the same time I was in college too.
But I think she was Miss World when I went to college, which would have been late 04. So surely it was 03. I'm going to go no.
Oh, good knowledge. It is 03. Banging the money.
Wow.
It's back level. 3-all. Mick, Cork won the All-Ireland. 2004, not 2004.
Cork did win the All-Ireland in 2004.
Yes. It's back in the lead. 4-3. One question left each. Final one for you, Will. Mickey Joe Hart represented Ireland at Eurovision 2004, not 2004.
Oh my God. No, it had to be earlier. No.
Correct. Well done. 2003. And then Mick, final one to win it. The ship on Cabin Fever, Irish reality TV show, hit the rocks off Tory Islands. 2004 or not 2004? Is he going to bottle it?
Not.
Correct, it's 2003.
Damn it. Mick a McCarthy lot of 2003 wins answers in there.
First ever and last ever. Great quiz of 2004. Well done.
Bit hairstyles.
Did it feel nostalgic yesterday, seeing those Westmead scenes?
Yes, 100%. Mainly because there was a million nostalgia articles in the week about Paddy O'Shea and his helicopter and taking over and everything that happened that year, because that's what you dip into now at this point. We're doing provincial final previews. And yeah, it did. And I was in Mullingar on Saturday night, and it was a very big feel around that too. Then lifting the Delaney Cup, obviously, since then. Had only been back to a final with the back-to-back finals, 15-16. So it had been a long time, even since they've been to the final. And yeah, I mean, you talked about the party last night. The party last night was insane.
Was it really, yeah?
Yeah, like Mark McCabe, they even had him playing Maniac 2000. And I bet they were probably playing Maniac 2000 in 2004 as well. Yeah. So it was like everything came back around full circle. So yeah, it was
Maniac 2004 or not.
There you go.
I didn't feel nostalgic about it, actually, I have to say. It felt like its own thing. Okay. I don't mean that in a glib way to dismiss the question or anything like that. I actually felt it was very much a... it feels like the kind of start of something with Westmead a little bit. You know, it's a very, very good team. And the biggest thing I took from it was like the scenes and the enjoyment and, you know, fans getting that kind of stuff out of the GA is just, there's nothing like it. And you just love to see it so much. And like, it's great that the provincial finals can still do that. But the other thing I took from it was, I wonder, has there ever been a time when Westmead have so comprehensively been better than Dublin? I know the match ended a draw after 70 minutes, and I know they've beaten them before, including in the quarterfinal in 04. Mm. But you kind of feel like they were smashing grabs. And it's not to say that Dublin won't go further than them in the course of the year, or that like on any given day that might not happen. But over the course of yesterday's game, it was a miracle that Dublin got level. Like, I thought Westmead were just way, way better than them and looked like a better football team than them. And that's a kind of a... That's a cool thing if you're from Westmead. I know it's not like a vintage Dublin team or anything like it, but we never thought we'd see that ever happen again.
I think particularly from the ebb that Westmead had come from. So last year they had that very disappointing result in the Tailteann Cup where they were knocked out by Wicklow when expectation was they were going to win it. Then obviously there was a bit of a, is he going to go to Cavan? Not going to go to Cavan with McCabe. He leaves and one of his backroom team in Mark McHugh ends up becoming the manager, which I think a lot of people probably didn't expect this season to go in the way it had, particularly when they conceded the late goal against Wexford Division 3. It was like, I don't think it was ever a fairy tale story that Westmead
lost
goes
best player.
And then lose Luke Loughlin right in the middle of the championship and their free taker. Like, they cycled through free takers quite a few times yesterday as well. And I kind of wonder for the All-Ireland Championship, now that John Heslin is back in and established, will John Heslin be the player taking the frees during the championship? Possibly.
There's so much muscle memory that goes at watching Dublin play football now. Mm. Like, when Westmead don't convert all their chances before the 70-minute hooter, you think they've blown it because Dublin are going to do a Dublin here and they're going to win this, obviously, in extra time. So for Westmead to hammer them in the first half of extra time just felt so weird and jarring, and it comes back to all those horrendous nights that they had clearly spent doing fitness pre-season. And the woods up in Castle Pollard, I think, were cited by Eamon Fitzmaurice in commentary yesterday afternoon, and Mark McHugh has constantly been talking about the fact that you won't die from exhaustion on the pitch. We might still be off you if you're feeling cramped. That's what he said to Jonathan Higgins yesterday, but you won't die from exhaustion. And maybe we should have listened closer to that, knowing that they would have actually put the foot down in extra time. And they have a squad now. Like, I mean, some of the players they brought off the bench, I mean, the greatest contribution Clare have ever made to Westmeath is the Baker contribution, and John Heslin coming off the bench as well. It's a cliche to say it's a 26-man game, but Westmeath seem to be edging towards that number.
I think Senna Baker is starting to realise his potential at this stage. So he was a prodigious underage player and was even excellent kind of DCU. People would have seen him playing, you know, third level football, left foot, right foot, tall, like a remarkable athlete. And then he would have been very disappointing not to be a starter when it came to that game yesterday. But talk about seizing his opportunity. Like, he was putting over points for fun and running through the Dublin defence. I still think Dublin lacked two-pointers so much, which continues to be a big problem for them, while Westmeath actually had two-point kickers across their team.
They lack incision as well.
They do.
Like, even like at the end, they did get that point to go ahead, but, you know, they were still sort of that, like, it's faffing around. I was there thinking, God, they haven't learned any lessons from what they did against Galway in the league kind of relegation game in the end. Now, they did get the score, but the best thing about Westmead for me was they wilted is the wrong word, because they didn't wilt, but because they kept at it and they played well all the way to the end, but they tightened up a little bit and they missed a lot of chances to put the game dead, basically. And then Cormac Costa got a brilliant free to bring it back to a point, a 2-pointer free, and then, oh sorry, to bring it level, and then Dublin went ahead with that point with a minute to go, and you're kind of thinking like, this is where it's gone now, like, you know, this is about winning this kick out and hoping that they get a chance, and instead they just like really coolly took the high percentage kick out, worked the way up the field, realised there was loads of time, and then, you know, obviously Baker got that great score, but like, they made that opening. They were just really, really calm. And I just felt like, God, this feels like a team that's been there before, and they haven't been. That's what you would have expected Dublin to do in that scenario if they were a point down with 45 seconds to go, you know, go and create the chance. And what happened was they actually scored it so easily that they nearly had another opportunity and could have had that, you know, a kick or a free at the buzzer to win it. And again, as you said, Owen, oh, maybe your chance is gone, because, you know, sometimes you rescue a draw with the last score, but actually you've thrown it away. Awfully last week in a way, or declared 2013 All-Ireland final. I always remember that, like a miracle score to equalise, but you walk away from Croke Park feeling like you've thrown away a match that you should have won easily. It's a weird feeling. Having extra time then, how do you turn yourself on for that straight away? I'm sure they were absolutely amazing.
It was a really interesting one, looking at the huddles before, at half time of extra time. It was just lots of insight, I suspect, if we were able to get like a full raw feed of the Dublin huddle with no cutting away. Every time they cut away from the Dublin huddle, I was like, give me more of this, because at the start you had Cormac Costello leading the charge in terms of the vocals. Then you see, like, he's not saying anything, but Conor Callaghan comes into shot. It certainly looks like Dean Rock is trying to calm things down, but he's not really saying much. And I think that's maybe where they would have lost a presence like Gerard Brennan quite significantly. That's the one thing they didn't need is extra time, because that seems to be where your manager can actually make a bit of a difference in terms of what he's saying to the players.
And not to mention their best footballers out injured, but I do like it. I don't want to dwell too much on Dublin because it feels like such a Westmeath story, and it is. But I am actually a bit blown away by how poor Dublin are. I can't believe that they have fallen so much. I don't know if there's all that much more in them than what we saw yesterday. I could be completely wrong about that. They played a very good tactical game against Loud rather than what I would say a good footballing game, but that's their only performance really that we've seen this year, and I'm just wondering where it's coming from. Like it's shocking really if you think about it. Like it's like who played well for them yesterday? Kieran Kilkenny, you know, maybe Brian Howard, maybe one or two more who've all been there before, who've all been there and done it. Niall Scully. Where are the young players coming from? Like, why has the conveyor belt stopped so suddenly?
So Dublin have dominated nearly every game middle of the field for the last quarter century. And obviously they've had some remarkable midfielders. But almost at the point when Ocofic Byrne went off yesterday, Westmead took complete and utter control around the middle of the field. I've never known a Dublin team to be so short of that platform, which then became a problem on their kickouts, became a problem in terms of getting the ball to their forwards. It wasn't good. And like, I know Loud probably won't play as badly as they did in the Leinster Championship when they meet in Croke Park in a couple of weeks' time. And I think a lot of teams will fancy their chance against Dublin when the All-Ireland Series comes round to the stage, if that's the type of performance you're going to see yesterday. And I'm with Mick, I don't want to take away from what was a remarkable display from Westmeath, but very, very concerning from Dublin. Like, it was a very, very meek performance from them.
We were chatting to Sam McCartan earlier today, who was centre-forward for Westmeath yesterday, kicked 2 points. We will play that out very shortly indeed, but you are starting with the football tonight, Will.
Yeah, well, we have the Arsenal team in ahead of this game, which is the clincher before the clincher, potentially, for Arsenal here. They could put a 5-point lead over Manchester City if they win against already relegated Burnley tonight. They've gone for a very attacking team, which has been named as well. So Arsenal were forced into a change at the back with Ben White's injury, of course, so Mosquera has come in. But they've gone with both Odegaard and Esse supporting Havertz in attack. So Arsenal very much going for it as they look to pick up 3 points that would put a huge pressure onto Manchester City ahead of tomorrow when they go away to Bournemouth as well. And if City were to drop points there, Arsenal win tonight, maybe it doesn't even go down to the final day. Perhaps no great surprise, Burnley got a good result against Aston Villa way back on the 10th of May when they last played, and they've named the same starting 11 as that 2-2 draw. But Mikel Arteta, speaking ahead of the game, the Arsenal manager reckons that the home support tonight could make a massive difference, and he says that they're going to need them if they're to get closer to a first title in 22 years.
Obviously, he's been extremely demanding from the beginning. I think the team has coped with that in a really fantastic way. There is no our choice. We have the opportunity from our supporters. It's going to be a Monday night. Let's take it in a really positive way. We leave something incredible with our supporters against Atletico. If we can replicate any of that, I know that the team is going to respond really, really well.
Yes, I was kind of looking at this lineup or what the lineup might be and thinking if there's going to be any sort of signpost to the Champions League final, but I think it's just attack, really. That's what's in mind when he goes with this 11. So it's Raya in goal. It's Mosquera, Saliba, Gabriel, Calafiori across the back. Then it's Odegaard and Eze alongside Declan Rice. And it's Saka, Kai Havertz and Leandro Trossard. So Victor Gyökeres on the bench tonight for Arsenal in that game. Goal difference is hardly a little bit of a factor here, is it? Like, Selhurst Park on Sunday probably won't be an easy 3 points. Definitely won't be an easy 3 points for Arsenal. There is a world where it does come down to
maybe,
goal difference.
Maybe go and try and win this game 7-0 so that you can go into and assume that City might win by the odd goal at Bournemouth tomorrow, and then you can go in and get a draw on Sunday and be happy with it. I can't imagine a world where they're even thinking that way.
No.
I think it's just get the job done tonight, isn't it? And this is the game where, you score early because things will get tight no matter who your opposition is.
It just feels weird.
For these last two games.
It just feels weird to have Lewis Skelly and Zubimendi on the bench given how kind of defensively minded that midfield is.
I think they'll want a similar performance to what happened against Fulham a few weeks ago. You go out and blitz, kill the game early, you take away any potential nervousness. It almost feels like they've ridden that kind of period of trepidation around the Emirates in some of these home games that happened earlier in the season where Arsenal got a little bit tetchy and it felt like maybe the crowd could turn if it's still 0-0. The fact that they navigated that Fulham game in between the congested period for the Champions League semi-final, the fact that they got over Atletico Madrid, as Arteta referenced in the clip that we just played, to me it just feels like they're playing with a confidence now. And I firmly believe that Arsenal win tonight, City drop points tomorrow, and we don't actually go to the...
Do you reckon, yeah?
Yeah.
Lewis Skelly was so good in that Fulham game.
Good news for Liverpool.
True. So that's the Arsenal game tonight. Tomorrow night there's another double slate of fixtures, as you've alluded to there, Will, with regards to Manchester City, but also the relegation picture is going to be a big thing tomorrow night, which I guess took another big step towards its conclusion yesterday.
Yeah, big dent for West Ham, of course. Their hopes of staying up severely dented by that 3-1 loss at Newcastle last night. A draw for Tottenham at Chelsea tomorrow. Spurs have only won once at Stamford Bridge since 1991, but a draw would be enough to keep them up. They'd effectively be staying up because of the vastly superior goal difference the Spurs have over the Hammers at the moment. Seamus Coleman's last home game as an Everton player ended with a 3-1 defeat against Sunderland yesterday. Coleman was named in the Ireland squad for the upcoming games with Qatar and Canada, which could mean that he's seeking to play on with a new club next year. The Everton boss David Moyes insists they've offered the Donegal man a number of jobs to try and keep him at the club.
I'm sad that we couldn't finish in a better note because he deserved a full house when he was leaving this football club. But he knows he only wants the team to win and he only wants Everton to do well. He's more interested in that than he is in him personally. I think we've said just about everything we can about Seamus because he's been so good. But hopefully he'll not be too far away.
Now, some Everton fans have said it. The Guard of Honour wasn't well communicated before the game. Mm. And a lot of them, despite their poor performance against Sunderland, would have grinned and bared it a little bit and hung around to give Seamus Coleman the send-off he deserved. It was just such a jarring image seeing a half-full Hill Dickinson Stadium.
Yeah, it was a pity. I mean, obviously, in fact, he made a mistake for the third goal as well. It wasn't helpful after he came on too. But it just seemed weird, yeah, that his family particularly were coming out for that moment around the pitch. And they understandably think when you're 3-1 down, last home game of the season, fans will leave. But I'm sure they wouldn't have left if they knew the Coleman was going to be there at the end. You mentioned, though, Wayne Rooney was looking very well in his...
I suppose he was. There was a picture of Wayne Rooney with all the other Everton legends, and he's by far the youngest of them. So Wayne's finally found a way of looking young after all these years. It was never something he was able to manage when he was young. But
I did kind of wonder about the reception he got back at Everton as well. Do you remember a few years back when he went to Manchester United and he kissed the badge in front of the Everton supporters? I know he went back there after he left Manchester United, but that would have left a sour taste if I was an Everton fan in my mouth.
Speaking of...
We all need to grow up.
Kiss the badge, though, of another team back at your boyhood club.
On Manchester United, there's been more VAR controversy and yet another apology.
It's a good thing the smash didn't matter, isn't it? The referee's governing body has admitted today that Manchester United's second goal against Nottingham Forest in the Premier League yesterday should not have been given. The official Michael Salisbury overruled VAR, having been sent to the pitchside monitor after a handball in the build-up, which put the hosts ahead in what would be eventually a 3-2 win at Old Trafford. The PGMOL's chief refereeing officer, Howard Webb, has spoken to both clubs and acknowledged that misjudgment this afternoon.
Any thoughts on this?
Not really. I thought it was bizarre. It's a non-factor game at the end of the season. Weird that VAR would suggest to a referee that there's a handball here and the referee decides he knows better when he's so clearly wrong. I wonder what the consequences are for that referee. Does he just go out again next week? I don't know.
It was very unusual to go to the pitside monitor and it to be so clear that it was a mistake and still to stand by it. Because I flicked away from it when I saw that they were going to the VAR decision. I flicked on the Leinster final and flicked back and couldn't believe it was given. And then I saw obviously the online discourse around the fact that, you know, the handball had actually been basically allowed to happen by the referee. To me, it's just a bizarre decision. It's not something to get your knickers in a twist about, but at the same time, could you imagine if that had actually happened in a game that had significance?
What we'll do is we'll take a break before getting into the heap of Gaelic Games content that we have from the weekend. So this bumper news round is brought to you by Viagra Connect. 50 milligram film-coated tablets contain sildenafil for adult men with erectile dysfunction. Maximum dosage, 150 ml tablet per day. Always read the label. Buy online at viagraconnect.ie. Subject to suitability following pharmacist consultation. So Sam McCartan, part of Will's news round, coming up after the break. And before that, it's time for the cash machine.
The news round on Off the Ball.
Right then, loads of Gaelic games to discuss from the weekend. I presume you are starting with Westmeath, Will O'Callaghan?
Yeah, the Westmeath manager Mark McHugh saying his players have now sealed a place in the history books after becoming Leinster football champions. The Lake County eventually beating Dublin after extra time at Croke Park, 228 to 26 points to land the Delaney Cup for the second time and the first time since 2004. McHugh spoke to Jonathan Higgins after the game. He says the panel will now become legends in Westmeath and he's challenged them to kick on in the upcoming All-Ireland Championship.
Did I think it was going to happen maybe as soon, you know, this year with our first year? Probably not. And, you know, I don't think anybody can take it away from us. We went the hard route here. You know, we beat Longford, Meath, Kildare and now Dublin. Like, you know, there's not many more Leinsters as hard won as that. And, I'm not saying I'm speechless, like, but to see the faces on the players, to see the faces on, you know, the rest of the management team that's from, obviously, Westmeath, and to see the supporters after the game, you know, that'll live long in my memory, and the chills it's given us today is just unbelievable, and very, very proud to be part of that squad. And I know I speak to you about pride all the time, but when them lads put a shift in like they're after doing and leaving everything on Croke Park's field, you know, I can't say any more for them lads. You know what they've done for their county. They you know, they're legends. They've legendary status now. You know, two times ever. You know, this is the second time ever happening. And what they've done, they probably don't even know what they're inspiring the next generation of young boys, and young girls, able to play football. And that's what we want. And we need to build in this now. You know, as a county and as a team. So, just class, Jonathan. Really, really class.
Yeah, Mark McHugh speaking there at Croke Park yesterday. Then today I had the opportunity to talk to Sam McCartan, Westmeath forward, and he was speaking around the extension of the Avonmore Protein Milk GAA-GPA partnership. Here's some of what he had to say. The noise was incredible yesterday. I wasn't at the match myself, but even on television, you could just tell how much the Westmeath fans seem to outnumber the Dublin fans. I'd imagine that's a massive factor when you're coming down the home stretch.
Yeah, I think, like Wally said it, I think it was in his speech that it felt like there was 80,000 there. Like I can't imagine what that would sound like, but like the Westmeath fans really let their voices be heard yesterday.
What are you trying to soak in the most in those sorts of moments? Are you just trying to appreciate the time with your teammates? Is it trying to absorb all the colour that you see on the streets of Mullingar? Or what's the thing that really sticks out to you from those sorts of celebration moments? Because, look, I know this is above anything else you might have experienced so far. So maybe it's one of these things you need to get used to. But after your first crack at a big Leinster title win, what are you feeling? What sticks out to you?
Yeah, I think like the whole weekend was kind of doubly special because the ladies took home the Leinster and the intermediate on Saturday. So like having the two teams up on the trailer there in the middle of town with everyone singing and dancing along with us, it was unbelievable. And I think just for myself, just kind of spending time with the team and with my family and seeing how much it meant to everyone in town and the county as a whole, like it was unbelievable.
Yeah, because obviously yourself and your brother got the job done yesterday in Croke Park, and then Lucy and Lara, your sisters, who you've mentioned there on the women's team, winning their Leinster final against Wexford on Saturday creates this brilliant moment for Westmeath. So the two teams were on the truck together, so the four siblings, you were all up there together kind of in celebration mode last night.
Yeah, it was gas. Like kind of seeing the girls had gotten back a little bit earlier than we had because they had obviously gotten the bus up earlier on, and I remember seeing driving on the bus into town and seeing them all gathering with the trophy. It was great because they kind of made their way through the crowd and up onto the stage.
So what are you thinking at full time in the game yesterday before extra time begins? Because it's the easy narrative to draw when you're watching the game is that, look, Dublin may have lost a few games in recent years, but they haven't lost any finals in recent years, and that when the game goes to extra time, particularly after you miss one or two opportunities before the hooter at 70, you can easily jump to the conclusion that Dublin are going to win this thing. You obviously aren't thinking this thing. So how do you manage to motivate yourself to constantly believe that you're going to be able to win this game? Because I'd imagine it's a tricky one when you go back into the dressing room.
Yeah, it probably is a bit tricky, but at the same time, like we had the experience of the Kildare game, which I think stood to us because we went in, we kind of knew what it would feel like. And I think having that knowledge of what the legs are going to feel like, what the body's going to feel like, and a few lads kind of having honest conversations with the management and kind of trying to figure out who's actually in the best position to go again for the next 20 minutes, you know. But like, I think the belief has kind of been building in the squad over the last few games. And I think about going into extra time, there wasn't really the kind of thought of, okay, we need to stay in it. I think the thought going into it was we're going to go out and try and take it, you know. So I think that was the best way we decided to go at it.
It's interesting there that there's conversations happening with lads about how they're feeling and if they're too tired or not. What do those chats tend to go like? Is there lads who want to keep going and kind of almost have to fess up that, listen, they may not have the energy in the legs?
Yeah, I think that's the kind of difficult part of it, is that everyone wants to be on the pitch to try and help, but sometimes putting the hand up and saying, listen, I actually can't go or I can't give any more is the right thing to do, and get a lad on who's fresh, because we're really starting to develop a great depth of our panel, and the lads who came in really made a big difference. Like Jack Duncan came back on and scored 1-1 in extra time, like, so it was a big shift for him. And then obviously sending off the bench in normal time really dug us out of a hole.
Has the belief piece or the fitness piece been a harder thing to achieve this year?
I think probably the fitness is probably the less enjoyable part of that you build, but belief kind of comes from you see what the effort that the management are putting in, and you see so Mark is coming from Donegal, the other lads are coming from Armagh, Tyrone, you know, it's a good trek down the road, you know. And then the lads closer to home, Jamie and Emmett, like, they're mad for Westmeath to win, and they're sick of the kind of narrative of being close but no cigar, you know. But so I think that's kind of the belief part is kind of built on the results that we've been getting, but also the commitment that our the lads have put into us.
Is there a point during the year, Sam, where you start to believe that winning Leinster is possible? Like, I'm not sure how much you talked about it.
I suppose it was always talked about as a goal, but I think the kind of real belief, and it kind of ties in with the belief of the supporters as well, was it probably came after the Meath game, and how I think we probably surprised a few people with what happened there, you know. So I think, like, even you kind of get that bit of a spark of excitement from young fellas coming in, like Shane Corcoran coming in and showing how skillful he is and how well he can take his scores. So I think the belief kind of really did rise from there, because me, they're an excellent team, you know, so the beating them did go a long way for us.
Then on the front of John Heslin, like, you guys are club mates, so you would have seen a good bit of John playing over the last year and a half, and this was the thing that we were told, that whenever he was available and playing for the club, that the new era of Gaelic football was made for this guy. So from a neutral standpoint, we were all delighted to hear that he was coming back to actually give it a crack at inter-county level. But I presume it's no surprise to you what he managed to do when he came off the bench yesterday. You were watching this guy pretty regularly since his inter-county retirement.
Yeah, pretty much all of my senior football at club and county level has been with John, you know, so like I'm not surprised at all. I was down watching a club game that he was playing in, and he shot the lights out. So he was moving at a different pace to everyone else, and it just it didn't surprise me at all that the lads wanted to get him to get involved, and seeing him come in, catching a massive kick out, kicking a few scores, like, it's nearly gotten to the stage where he can't surprise you anymore, because you know what he's capable of.
Yeah, Sam McCartan speaking there earlier on, and that full piece is available to listen to now wherever you get your Off the Ball podcast. He was speaking at the extension of the Avonmore Protein Milk GAA GPA partnership. So brilliant stuff from Westmeath. And kind of lost in the middle of all of this is poor Armagh. This is also an amazing story in its own rights. Take us there, Will. What's going on?
Only the 18-year wait for Armagh to be crowned Ulster football champions. After losing the last three finals, a couple of them on penalties, Kieran McGeaney's team have their hands on the Anglo-Sel Cup following an extra-time win over Monaghan at Clonus. Oisin O'Neill and Tiernan Kelly getting the goals, a 228 to 25 points victory. Rory Grugan was speaking to our own Tommy Rooney after the game, and he was, of course, a winner of the All-Ireland in 2024, but he says winning a provincial is still really important.
Our squad depth was talked a lot about in 24. It's probably taken a hit there in the off-season this year. It's allowed for young blood to come in, and that has given it a freshness as well. And as the injuries finally sort of started to clear up, you have that depth then to bring on likes of Ross McQuillan, Oisin O'Neill, and boys like Aidan Forker and stuff. So it was nice to get in, first of all. For me, it's been a long enough road. My injury troubles have been fairly tough, but I've been trying to hang tight and hope that good moments will come later in the year. It's a long season. So it's nice to be in and be a part of there, the extra time at least.
And you can also use what's between your ears if the body isn't moving as well. We saw John Heston come off the bench for Westmeath today, make a comeback, but being out, Rory, and coming into a game like that in the midst of the madness, what are you trying to do?
You have to understand what you're good at. Like, I'm 35 now. I'm not like Connolly. I'm not going to go beat people at 100 mile an hour and kick a point. Like you said, you have to use your head. If the game requires that to be slowed down and get into kind of set plays, or if it requires you to drop back and help someone, you have to have a good sense, a good head on your shoulders, and try to make good decisions on the ball. And I think that's what my role is at this stage.
I better let you get into that dressing room, but you give me one more answer. You won an All-Ireland in the middle of it, but there's been a lot of heartbreak for this team in Ulster Finals. Is there a word to sum up what it's like? Because I could see the celebrations.
It's just very special. Like, it's that relief feeling again when you've been so close for so long as a team. Like, 18 years is very long as Armagh people to have not won one. And it's a long time coming, but we're going to enjoy it.
Yeah, it's obviously one of those things that we've been waiting for so long to happen, but we knew they would pick one off eventually, although nothing can be certain. In Ulster, it kind of feels that Armagh were clearly the best team in this competition. They had two big, big wins, but they were against Fermanagh and they were against Down, and we had real drama in this as well. Like, Armagh Tyrone was really dramatic. Monaghan Derry was incredible. Down knocking out Donegal. So I'm just trying to figure out where exactly the form lines are when it comes to these two teams. Yesterday, I think the way in which Armagh pulled away from Monaghan in extra time is possibly the real Armagh. And they spoke about the depth there. And when you've got like Barry McCambridge coming on in the 87 minute, Aidan Forker coming on in the 88 minute, it's a pretty good list of substitutes that you have. And the man we were just listening to comes on after 65 minutes, and that's the thing that everybody's talking about now with Armagh, is that 26 is the 26 that's going to be hard to beat.
O'Neill comes on at all, as opposed to the start from the start. It's mad their ability to build a squad and to kind of like play the same no matter who's there. It does feel like there's always 30 people who can play for Armagh at any given time. Like, I thought they were really, really good yesterday. I thought I'd be really proud if I was a Monaghan fan, I have to say. There's just something really tenacious and dogged about this team, and brilliant as well. Like, you know, and they just kept going, and they could have even won it at the end. Like, you know, they nearly had a counter-attack towards the end, right before the buzzer, and you kind of fancy they might have scored if they got the chance, but there just doesn't feel like they're as good as Armagh. I don't think anyone in the country outside of Donegal, well, certainly Kerry and maybe Donegal are. It's also like, that's the fourth Ulster final in a row that Armagh have drawn.
Yeah.
And there is a point about the draws. I'll actually talk about it on their GA power rankings later in the year. Like a mad stat about their amount of draws and stuff like that. But if you just take into it, other than the semi-final against Kerry in 2024, Armagh never came out on the right side of any of the drawn games that they were in, between be they loss in penalty shootouts or extra time. And now this season, they've had two draws out of their four games in Ulster, and they've won them both in extra time. So their addiction to not getting over the line within the 70 minutes remains an absolute epidemic that they need to get better at, and they need to figure out a way of killing off games in 70. But they have figured out a way of killing off games in 90, which wasn't there before, and could be a massive step forward for them.
Could be. This is a conversation now when it comes to like what's going to happen for the rest of this year. I think Armagh are also pretty well conditioned that even though this is the first Ulster title for a lot of these players, they'll be well conditioned to come straight back into training on Tuesday or Wednesday, whatever the case may be. And I think they're a pretty good bet for the All-Ireland from here on out. I don't think this is going to be like a distraction that's going to pull them away from trying to win another Celtic Cross in the middle of July. So I'm just fascinated by them, really. Like, we're going to learn a lot more this weekend when it comes to like the form lines of lots of teams. The trouble with trying to predict the All-Ireland at the moment is the team X is in the long grass, and a lot of those teams re-emerge from the long grass now this weekend, and we'll see what sort of form the likes of Donegal are in. We'll see what sort of form the likes of Meath are in, which I'm fascinated to watch them this weekend, and then maybe we can make a proper appraisal of Armagh. But I think any team that wins Ulster is Mayo. And
teams that have been gone a long time, like that you've almost forgotten about.
Yeah.
Tyrone, you know, like, who knows?
Tyrone, gone for 6 weeks.
It's difficult to make massive judgments after this first round of games as well. So having watched this championship and covering Laois over the last few years, we've got the exact same structure as this. Yes, it is better to go straight through the front door, but sometimes you can lose your first round game and actually get a better path coming through the losers section, and actually then you rally, win a couple of games, and you're going into a quarter final. So I'm not saying there's going to be a phony war over the next few weeks, but when I look at some of these fixtures, in a way we're blessed as neutrals, whatever about you, Owen, about the fact that we get Kerry Donegal in the first round, but actually where you want Kerry Donegal is in round three, as opposed to now, where there's a lot more at stake, rather than a team who loses here will still go into the losers path. So
let's get to Tipperary.
Yeah, so the hurling championship, we know the All-Ireland champions are gone at this stage, ahead of their final game. Their reign brought to an end at the weekend. Limerick's 229 to 220 win over Waterford yesterday knocked Tipperary and the Daisha out of contention to qualify for Munster. That result was combined with Clare's 11-point win against Tipperary on Saturday. Means that Cork, Clare and Limerick will finish in the top three positions, with those final spots to be decided this coming weekend. The Tip manager, Liam Call, is at a loss to explain their poor form in the championship this season.
Players put in huge effort, lads, you know, and we have prepared really well. You know, I think all of our players have put their hand up and say that all our metrics, all our numbers are exactly where they need to be versus where they were this time last year. So, but it's about bringing it to the big arena on the day, and, you know, being prepared to put your body on the line. And today, physically, Clare, you know, really dominated as a swarm tackle. Clare were there in numbers. You know, how many times did you see our guys trying to reach out to get a high hand pass up over a group of players all around them? They were hunting in packs, and they smelled blood and they went after it, and, you know, that's just the way it is. We just didn't get to the pitch that's required to get success at this level.
Tough match now, going down to Limerick as well next day.
You know, it's really difficult. What do you do? You go down to take on Limerick, one of the greatest teams over the last decade, and just have to our best to try and get in behind the lads now as best we can for the next couple of days, and try and go to Limerick and really, you know, try and redeem our name and our identity of some sort, because today, like, it's really, really, really disappointing.
The Munster Hurling Championship shows its ruthless side once again.
Yeah, definitely. Tip not really at the races at all. Like, I actually couldn't believe how poor they were on Saturday night. I think everybody was waiting for them to put in a performance. And even if they didn't win in the end, we thought we'd see closer to the real Tip. And if anything, they went backwards from their performance at the first two games. Just didn't show up at all. I can't think of one player that I would say played well or played above what you would expect. So that's a real pity. From Clare's point of view, then, like, absolutely fully at the pitch of the game. And just can I answer a quick note on the club of Clonara, right? Small village in East Clare, near Limerick, right? And talk about having the centre of everything that was good about Clare last week. You had Dermot Stritch, young, shooting star coming on, first start in the championship, gets 6 points from play. Ian Galvin comes off the bench when Mark Rogers gets injured. What a career he's had, like winning goal in Thurles all the way back in 2018. He comes on, he's absolutely brilliant, scores 1-2. And then, of course, you have the great man, John Conlon, coming back into the team after not being involved for the first two games. And suddenly Clare go from being the leakiest defence of all time to not conceding a goal in the game. It was Conlon was all we needed, you know. So well done to Clonlara.
Yeah, I think Dermot Stritch, once you show up to any sort of level at intercounty hurling and you're putting over a few scores and you've got flowing locks that protrude from under the helmet, your ceiling is so much higher than anybody else on that pitch. So I'm expecting this guy to be a future hurler of the year, basically. He's set the gauntlet down.
He's looking good.
I think he was nominated for GAA Player of the Week as well after his performance at the weekend, 6 points. So it's another very exciting Clare season on the horizon, potentially. We'll take one last quick break for this hour, and we'll get back to one or two more stories from Will after these.
The News Round on Off the Ball.
You're welcome back to Monday Night's Off the Ball. Remember, full live match commentary of Arsenal versus Burnley in the Premier League coming up at 8 p.m. Brian Kerr alongside Stephen Doyle for that. At halftime, we'll play a section of Monday Night Rugby, which was recorded earlier. I was alongside Fiona Hayes, chatting predominantly about yesterday at the Aviva Stadium, over 30,000 supporters there, record number for an Irish home international at rugby. We also discussed the end of the regulation season in the URC with pretty big consequences for the likes of Ulster and for Connacht. So plenty more to come on the rugby front later in the show. Well, we should touch on Celtic. It was the start of the sporting weekend, but it was possibly the biggest, most memorable thing from the sporting weekend.
Yeah. Sunday was kind of disorientating because the Saturday Premier League schedule was on Sunday, which made you really wonder what day it was when those half 12 kickoffs and half fives. But I actually really liked the fact that you had the Scottish Premiership title decider early on the Saturday and then the FA Cup final a little bit later. This coming weekend, you've got the Championship final, which is in that kind of sweet spot as well. But what drama at the end of the pitch, at the end of the game. Hearts like effectively led the Scottish Premiership title race for the entire season, but in the end, beaten 3-1 against Celtic. That was a chance for Hearts to win a first title in 66 years. Celtic now out in front, a record 56th title for them. Martin O'Neill, of course, coming in midstream during the season for Celtic, but perhaps the biggest story is the fact there were fans on the pitch when there was still time on the clock. Celtic have apologised for those players going onto the pitch, and potentially some of the Hearts players who were jostled on the way off as well. The fact that there was a VAR decision right at the end of the game, albeit I think VAR got it right for the offside for the decisive Celtic goal.
You think? This is bananas. This is a lot of people who don't know the rules of football shouting and screaming at Twitter about cheats and organised victory for Celtic. And yeah, we're legendary world champion boxers who seem to not know the rules of football either. it's all crazy. Like, I can understand a general feeling of football fans being salty and feeling like the big teams always get the decisions. But the idea that this goal was offside because a player who was involved a phase later is offside just suggests to me that these people never watched a game of football. Because it's 20-odd years since that's been offside.
Yeah,
I think the people who are posting were obviously being deliberately dishonest as well, because if you use the screenshot, which I think was one that Carl Frampton actually quote tweeted, was the one that showed Maeda and his line where he wasn't interfering with play. So if you saw that, you weren't watching the game, your assumption would be, how have they got this wrong? Actually, you can see half his leg is going to hit the ball. Well, obviously the pass is the pass before the pass, and he's in an onside position when the ball is eventually played across. But you just knew it was going to be a VAR decision, particularly after the handball that happened midweek, which got Celtic their late winner there. It's a bizarre way for Celtic to win the title, but yet it felt very fitting that it would go down to the last couple of minutes of the game.
And very fitting for this hour of the show that it was a real throwback to 2004 to see Martin O'Neill running along the sideline. I mean, it's just been a comeback that has been so nostalgic seeing it, because he just feels the same and looks the same to what he was back then. And as Republic of Ireland fans, we've gone on such a journey with Martin O'Neill. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if people have done a full 180 in terms of their opinion on the man, that in the late stage of O'Neill and Keane, I'd say the love towards O'Neill probably dimmed a little bit. And this has been a massive sort of image resuscitator for Martin O'Neill, I'd say, for a lot of people in Ireland. For a lot of people, their opinion would not have changed one jot as a result of what happened with Ireland, but maybe through interviews and being a little bit prickly, it did change. And for me, I find it remarkable that I feel the same way about Martin O'Neill now as I did back in 2004, 2005, when, you know, he is the sort of very lovable Celtic manager. For him to rediscover that is quite remarkable this season, amongst everything else that he did and his team did on the pitch. One thing to mention about this game, one of my favourite points was Daizen Maeda's celebration for his goal, which was kind of like, I've just scored a goal, that's a walk-off win, forgetting that there's like another like half a dozen minutes to be played here. Yeah. He was like celebrating as if there's no more football to be played. And I loved that confidence. And he has been the hero. We talk about O'Neill being a hero. He is the hero for them. His post-split form has been absolutely outrageous. 7 goals post-split.
Unreal. We're hearing about his inconsistency at all. Well, like, you know, let him be inconsistent until the last month of the season from now on. But to have a game go down to the wire, the two teams battling for the title playing during the last 8 seasons, happens so rarely. I don't know if it's happened in any leagues we watch since 1989, the most dramatic game of football of all time. And then you have it where it's like Hearts lead the league until the 87th minute of the last game. And then
Celtic score, and then the last 10 minutes are drama and chaos and madness and fan invasions and all kinds of stuff, like, you know, and players leaving a ground in their kit crying.
It's also very hearts. It was very hearts, by the way. So in 1965, they lost the league on goal average. They lost 2-0 to Kilmarnock on the last day. The way it was decided back then was goal average as opposed to goal difference. So you basically divided the amount of goals you scored by the amount of goals you conceded. I think they lost by 0.02 to lose the title on the last day.
Okay, well, if you're a Hearts fan, then Will O'Callaghan has made you cheer right up this evening, because it could be a lot worse. It could be 1965. Will O'Callaghan, thank you very much for tonight's News Round. The Hurling Pod will be dropping very soon on the Off the Ball channels. We'll be recording live on YouTube, in fact. Mick, thank you. We're taking a quick break. Then it's time for kick-off at the Emirates Stadium. Arsenal versus Burnley.
The News Round on Off the Ball.
The News Round is brought to you by Viagra Connect 50 milligram film-coated tablets. Contains sildenafil for adult men with erectile dysfunction. Maximum dosage 150 milligram tablet per day. Always read the label. Buy online at viagraconnect.ie. Subject to suitability following pharmacist consultation.